south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
If you remember, in last week's show, we had a lady dentist from the States, right? And she was talking about, or we were talking about, the difference between dental treatments in Latin America and treatments up in the States. Well, wouldn't you know it, right on the heels of that, another dentist wrote in. Calls himself Dr. Z. He's from Texas. He doesn't want me to use his real name. He says, Johnny, speaking of bad teeth, if you're living in the United States and your teeth are bad, you're not going to get a job as a receptionist or, let's say, a cashier. You're going to be put in the back of the store somewhere, far from the public eye. That's how it is in all developed countries, except, as you say, the United Kingdom. You've even said in your comments it's a mystery how the United Kingdom, a first world country, or a group of first world countries, can have such bad teeth in general and still get away with it and still not feel bad about it. They're not stupid. They must know the rest of the developed world is mocking them. I've seen them mocked slyly in movies. Guests on panel talk shows will mock them. And comedians occasionally throw in jabs about British teeth too. After all, in the US and Canada, bad teeth have come to be seen as a marker of poor parenting, low educational achievement, and slowly or faulty intellectual development. It's also a fact, one of the first things a lower-class American does as he moves higher up in the socioeconomic ladder is to get his teeth fixed, since teeth are really an outward marker of a caste system. In fact, Dr. X says, I saw a survey a few months back where they interviewed single mothers and middle and lower middle class people applying for work and benefits at Illinois State Job Centers. The pollsters asked interviewees what their first priority would be if the U.S. established universal health care coverage tomorrow. One of the top two answers on the list was always, I'd have my teeth done. Here's the catch, though. The American public doesn't seem to realize that in the UK, where they have national health care, it covers dentistry, too. That then begs the question, why do Brits have such bad teeth when they can get them done for free? The simple answer is this. In the UK, you get free dentistry for broken and damaged teeth. Cosmetic work, which is, of course, elective, is not covered. So if a person has discolored or crowded or twisted teeth, or even a more common example, a front tooth is very dark because the nerve has died. That frequently happens with blunt and sports trauma. In that situation, the national healthcare system will pay for the root canal, the endodontics. But they won't pay for the crown or the veneer to make it match the look and color of the adjacent teeth. That's cosmetic and isn't covered. And that is the expensive part. Routine dentistry is cheap. Cosmetic dentistry is expensive. So, Johnny, for all your listeners out there who think national health care in the United States, including dentistry, is the solution, the be-all and end-all, just have a look at the UK as an example of what dentistry looks like under a national health care system. It's not just a one-off experiment, either. They've had national health care in Britain since right after World War II. Anyhow, for what it's worth, just a little more information for you. Keep up the good work, Johnny. Been listening for 3 years, haven't missed a show yet. Signed, Dr. Z. All right, thanks for those comments, Dr. Z. By the way, if you're down here in Latin America and you're sitting talking to a Latina or a bunch of Latinas, and you ask them what they think of gringos, what are the assumptions they have about gringos in general? Well, guess what? Along with the other niceties that make up our gringo advantage, most of which we don't deserve, they always seem to comment on our teeth. They say, nice and white and straight, that's a gringo trait. And by and large, it's mostly true. Now, of course, a fad that's been going around here in Latin America for some time now, at least 5 or 6 years, is the explosion of Latin Americans wearing braces. Funny thing, too, you know, when I was a kid back in the States many years ago, when a kid had braces, it was for one reason and one reason only, because they had some real crooked, twisted, or buck teeth. And the people who did get them could not wait to get those damn things off. They put up with them, all right, because they were expensive, and mom and dad were on the 5-year payment plan. I remember in my family, 3 of my brothers and sisters had them. And man, that headgear they'd wear at night. That could be a couple of years of torture in itself, at least so I've heard. And then, maybe, I'd say 20 years ago, they developed clear braces, and everybody wanted those, though they were more expensive. Because no one, well, the American girls anyway, wanted to look like they had a mouthful of metal. All of a sudden, there was a big change, and up in the States, all the young girls were wearing see-through brackets. And even though they weren't quite see-through, I mean, you could tell they were wearing them. To the adolescent ladies, anyway, it sure beat the metal mouth look. Now, here in Latin America, regarding braces, things are a bit different. Lots of young adolescent kids and 20-somethings are getting them. Though that's only a fairly recent phenomenon because dentists are stretching out the payment plan, sometimes up to 10 years. On top of that, getting braces down here is so much less expensive than in the States, you wouldn't believe it. In fact, what might cost you 5 or 10 grand up in the States is more like a grand or even less down here. But oddly enough, almost no one with braces here in Latin America has the clear ones. Or lingual braces, which are behind your teeth, you can't see them. Though clear and lingual braces are available, they're more expensive. The thing is, even if Latinos had the choice to get those lingual or clear braces, they want the metal ones. Have you guessed why? Because down here, unlike in the States, to get braces, it's considered a sign of affluence. And only people with some kind of means or decent credit can afford them. That, of course, means it's important that they're seen by people. In fact, I've been told by a few Latin American dentists that their patients, when finished with the treatment, some are reluctant to have them removed. They want the dentist to leave them on. Oh, and one Latin American dentist told me that he's got some patients whose bite or malocclusion cannot be fixed with braces alone. In other words, they need multiple extractions, bone resections, oral surgery, even what they call maxillary expansion devices. Those are metal mini jacks that are cemented to your teeth that you torque with a screw. Some people need all that in addition to the braces. Of course, those extras come at a cost. And since the patient is the boss or holds the purse strings, it's quite common for people in that situation to forego all the other stuff and only elect to get the braces, leaving lots of treatments incomplete. But that doesn't seem to matter because just having the braces is a status symbol. For some people, that's enough in itself. Though not much of a status symbol at all for upper, middle class, and wealthy Latinos who could always afford it. But put it off for one reason or another. Just like in the States, more and more Latino adults are getting braces too. Though it is still quite a status symbol for Latina adults born into poverty but are doing fine now and moving on up. The fact is you'll see lots and lots of 30, 40, and 50-something Latina ladies with braces, the metal brackets, of course. Because they gleam, man, you can see them. Though it mostly occurs in the big city, you don't see it much at all out in the boonies. However, there are almost no 30, 40, and 50-something Latino guys wearing braces. At least in my experience, I don't think I've ever seen that. Now, adolescent and 20-something Latino guys, yes, but over 30 crowd, no, not much at all. Yep, yet another case where it's all about the ladies. Look, think about it. Can you imagine a 20-something American guy or gal asking their dentist to leave the braces on for longer than the prescribed time? The dentist would think you're nuts. Only in Latin America, huh? All right, now here's something with a strange social context that you won't understand unless you speak some Spanish. Though, believe me, it's good to know. You may or may not know the word for cheap, C-H-E-A-P, in Spanish is barato. So, for example, if you go to the store and you see a box of Kellogg's cornflakes alongside the local brand will be más barato, more cheap. I'm sure you probably know that más, M-A-S, means more. So, más barato. Taking it a bit further, if you're in a hardware store, let's say, they're called ferreterias, by the way. Hardware stores are ferreteria. And you want to buy, let's say, an electric drill. You're not a commercial builder and you might only use it twice a year, so you want something cheap, something inexpensive, not the commercial grade. So you'll say to the guy behind the desk, I'd like to buy a drill that's decent and barato. Well, he'll certainly understand. You got your point across, but here's the thing. The more educated, more cultured Latinos and Latinas will almost never use that word barato because it makes them sound barato. It makes them sound cheap or like skinflints. And Latinos, no matter what socioeconomic status they're in, don't want to leave that impression. So they'll use a different word or phrase. They won't say, show me a decent drill that's barato. They'll say, show me a decent drill that's economico or más economico, more economic. Believe me, you'll almost never hear a Latino walk into a clothing store and say, ¿Dónde están los zapatos baratos? Where are the cheap shoes? They'll say, ¿Dónde están los zapatos más económico? Meaning, where are the economy brands? It sounds a bit nicer, more diplomatic, a lot less harsh, huh? Of course, you'll hear gringos, even gringos who know a lot of Spanish, say the word barato a lot. I say it myself. For example, if you're in one of those big food and produce markets, buying some grapes or avocados, and you're dickering with the salesperson, you might say, No sé, un poco más barato, por favor? Meaning, I don't know, can you come down a little? Can you sell them a bit cheaper? Yep, that's right. You'll hear gringos who know a little Spanish say things like that all the time. But with the local Latinos, that's not how they'd approach it. Anyway, that's just one of many Spanish language details you pick up along the way. That is, if you're paying attention. All right, speaking of gringos and expats in Latin America, making and hanging with friends who are locals. Now, of course, upon arrival, the first thing you do is meet gringos. You'll be drawn to them. And secondly, to locals who speak English. That's what happens when you first arrive and your Spanish sucks or is non-existent. It happened to me. Next in line, probably after you're down quite a while, you'll start making friends with locals, neighbors maybe, who speak no English at all, just Spanish. I know, it might take a while, especially if your Spanish sucks, but if you're in a neighborhood, town, or subdivision, you're going to have some neighbors who are 100% Spanish speaking. That's bound to happen even if you land smack dab in the middle of the tourist trail, like in Costa Rica. Chances are your guards, your garbage men, your construction workers, etc. will not speak English. So then you might ask, how difficult or easy is it to make true Latino friends? Not just a hi, how are ya, wave to the next door neighbor kind of friends. I'm talking about people you actually sort of hang around with, go to events and parties with and such. Well, get this. In a recent survey by a group called Inner Nations, titled Inside and Outside the Expat Bubble, this rather large survey compared expats' abilities to make friends among the local population as well as with other expats in the community. In other words, how good are expats at making local friends? And in this survey, countries considered outside the expat bubble are those where expats mix more easily with locals, such as most Latin American countries. Whereas those considered inside the bubble are those where expats have limited access to the local population, such as many of the Muslim and Middle Eastern countries. Turns out the top 10 countries in the world where expats live and mostly hang out with locals, or report it's the easiest to hang with and meet locals. Turns out, as you might expect or maybe not, 6 out of those 10 are in Latin America, starting with Colombia, then Ecuador, Peru, Brazil, Chile, and Argentina. The other 4 countries in the top 10 that aren't in Latin America are Greece, Philippines, Portugal, and, somewhat counterintuitively, Russia. Then there's those 10 countries in the world where expats have a real hard time mingling with the locals and consequently end up hanging with mostly expats. Not surprisingly, none of those countries being in Latin America. Here's that list. Qatar, Kuwait, Luxembourg, United Arab Emirates, Belgium, Saudi Arabia, Denmark, Switzerland, Hong Kong, and Singapore. In other words, in that last group of 10 countries listed, the majority of expats report it's very difficult to make local friends. Oh, and another thing this survey showed is that going to expat events remains the top way in meeting new people and hanging with new friends. And by the way, for me, that's one of the easiest ways to get stuck in a rut, too, hanging at expat events. Oh, and by the way, there's a comment in this survey about Russia. Even though it's in the top 10 list of places where you can meet locals and hang with them, it turns out a high percentage of expats report that, in general, the Russian population is quite unfriendly to foreigners. Sort of a conundrum. Same thing with the Middle Eastern and Gulf Arab states. Somehow, the locals there don't seem to like foreigners much. You think? Reminds me of a t-shirt that said, "Be nice to America or they just might force democracy down your throat too." Oh, and one more thing. This survey came out before the Ukraine-Russian thing. By the way, before I forget, have you been keeping up with this Queen Elizabeth funeral thing? I mean, look, even if you don't give a rip, it's all over the place, so you can't avoid it. And as for me, since I'm always looking for cracks in the armor, cracks in the facade, I've noticed, and maybe you have too, it's a funny thing how dictators and autocratic strongmen leaders, they're showing up with these uniforms and such, standing at attention at the funeral, with their breastplates and lapels loaded with all kinds of unearned trophies and medals and what they call in the military, fruit salad. Please, come on, is anyone really impressed by that shit? Seems like the more third world or even fourth world the country's representatives are, you know who shows up at state funerals. Thoroughly corrupt scumbags from Africa, Venezuela, Cuba, Bolivia, Nicaragua, you know the drill. Not to mention the Clintons, the Bidens, the Bushes, the Obamas. After all, the country's biggest shitbags are obligated to show up for the big event, right? Just like with any toilet, the biggest chunks float to the top. Now, to me, it makes me laugh, all those guys with their fake military medals and awards for non-existent battles or battles they sat out and never fought in. Just look at that idiot Prince Charles and Prince Albert from Monaco What did they ever do for the world? Yet they've got a million fake medals. At least Michael Jackson, with all his fake fruit salad, had talent. He could sing and dance. Remember how he liked to dress up like that, too? Anyway, all those pompous-ass visiting dignitaries at the Queen's funeral, they remind me of way over-the-top drag queens. So ridiculous, you can't stop staring at them. Makes you wonder if they're that thick they don't realize they're the ones on display as the biggest, most pathetic jokes of all. But I digress, man, did I digress. Oh, and here's another observation that speaks volumes about Latin America, in a sad but good way. Just a couple days ago, I was at a bank. I got up to the cashier's window and the computers went down. Not unusual in Latin America. So they said, give us 5 or 10 minutes. It should be back online again. Now, that could mean 5 or 10 minutes, an hour, tomorrow, or never. But since I'd already spent 20 minutes waiting in line to get that far, I decided to hang in there for 5 or 10. So I took the earbuds out of my ear. I'm always listening to a podcast or an audiobook or something. I started in with a small talk, made some conversation with her. First thing you say is, to break the ice, at least I do anyway, I say, habla inglés, do you speak English? Now, it doesn't matter to me if she does or not. It's just that if she speaks English, it's the great qualifier. Now, if they speak English, the way they speak it tells me a whole lot about her and her history. That's a subject for another time. Now, being that I'm almost exclusively off the Gringo tourist trail, and this bank was way off the tourist trail, I was pretty sure 99% of the people there, the workers and the clients, did not speak a lick of English. Funny thing, too, the longer you're here in Latin America, you sort of develop a sixth sense. You know, before you even ask someone, whether they speak English or not. And this 20-something lady bank teller, she did not. But I already sort of knew that. Though, like I said, it is a great icebreaker. By the way, one thing about Latinos and Latinas, they'll almost never lie about how much English they know. In fact, many will downplay it. In fact, this lady said she didn't know any English at all, but I found out she knew maybe 20 or 30 words. Whereas it seems to be just the opposite with gringos and expats. Most of us overestimate the amount of Spanish we think we know, especially when it comes to book Spanish or Spanish we learned in school. Turns out most gringos and expats who come down with a couple of semesters or even a couple of years of Spanish under their belt from high school or college, they're way too overconfident. Soon enough, they find out that school Spanish doesn't translate very well to conversational street Spanish. So anyway, I got to talking to this bank teller in Spanish while the computer system was rebooting. Continuing with the small talk, I asked her where she lived. She mentioned some little pueblo somewhere. I had never heard of it. Though, believe me, in any particular Latin country, there are lots of little pueblos and towns that have almost the same name, so you can get confused when you're looking one up. In fact, you just might lose a couple hours en route looking for a place when a vowel or a letter had been switched around. That's happened to me. Anyway, one of my favorite questions is, how long does it take you to get from your home to work in the morning or back home at night? That will give you quite a bit of information about a person, too. Now, in this lady's case, you might not believe this, it took 2.5 hours each way to get back and forth from home to work. You really have to admire that kind of persistence. She said she had to transfer buses 3 times. Then I asked her how long she'd been working at the bank. She said 2 years. That means she's been making that trip 2.5 hours each way for 2 years. Man, that's dedication. Now, having observed this kind of thing before, I knew why. I didn't have to ask her, but I did. You know, small talk again. I said, you have kids, right? She said, yep, 2. And the next question, of course, would be, where's daddy? But I knew better to ask. I knew the answer already. Daddy wasn't around. He abandoned the kids or was dead or something. And then I asked her the logical question. Why don't you live a lot closer? Life would be so much easier. She said, yes, but her mother and brothers and sisters lived in the same house, and therefore she paid no babysitters or childcare. And there's the fact that if you live out in the boonies, or in a small town or distant pueblo, for $100 a month, you could rent a halfway decent place, whereas in the city, closer to where all the action is, $100 a month will get you an apartment in a nasty, scruffy ghetto. So she was being pragmatic. Practical, sort of. She'd rather tough out the journey and live in a decent place with her friends and family than live alone in a dumpy barrio close to work. Now remember, this lady's making about $350 a month. Yep, that's right, as a bank teller. So she's got very limited options as to what she can pay for rent. Hey, at least she has a decent, steady job and a sort of means of advancement. You can't advance in a bank, you know. Though her big life mistake, and you can guess it by now, is that she did the stupid and oh-so-common thing. She got knocked up by some idiot, brain-dead, macho Latino with no prospects in her teens. Twice. The bigger irony in all this is, of course, no family wants that to happen to their daughter. Everyone knows that'll screw up your life forever. So then what's the irony? I'll tell you, and I've seen this myself. The teenage girl gets knocked up. She comes home. There's gnashing and wailing of teeth between her and dad and mom, the whole family. Then, the very next day, maybe even that night, she's on the phone to her friends, suddenly feeling wonderful that she's going to have a baby. Somehow, an event that seems to be one of the worst things that could happen to an adolescent Latina's life becomes a great gift, along with great happiness. And as the days and months go on, the whole family, even the parents, warm up to the idea, and when the kid's born, suddenly, it's the greatest event in history. Now, I'm not saying you should be mad at the kid or the girl forever. You should never hold a grudge, and it certainly wasn't the kid's fault. But I remember when I was a lot younger up in the States, the out-of-wedlock teenage mother thing carried a huge stigma. In fact, I knew of two Catholic girls, neighborhood girls, my age, about 16 at the time. They disappeared one summer and didn't show up back at school in September. They got sent off to convent to have a kid. Of course, we didn't find out the truth till many years later, though there were rumors flying. But that's the way they handled that stuff back then, at least the Catholics. The thing is, here in Latin America, although parents are totally against their kids getting knocked up as teenagers, once it happens, though, that stigma completely seems to fade away in a New York minute, replaced by the feeling that it's a glorious event. Hey, don't get me wrong, it's good for the kid, it wasn't his fault, but bad for the society in general. And in the end, who gets punished? It's almost always the mother. For a woman in Latin America, even in the States or anywhere, having a couple of kids as a teenager makes your life infinitely more difficult. Even so, most Latina mothers take responsibility. Think of that 2.5-hour ride. All right, switching gears a bit. Remember a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about how American expats, travelers, gringos are receiving much less than a warm welcome once they get their Plan B started. Well, since we brought that up, I've been seeing article after article mentioning the same thing, coming from lots of different places and lots of different countries, too. For example, let me highlight a few points from this article. It says, a lady named Ray Empera is a Nicaraguan living in Ecuador and says that while she's not against foreign immigration to her country, that's Nicaragua, it causes problems when many expats move to the same city or village. She explained that foreigners are inundating the seaside town of San Juan del Sur in Nicaragua, making the area impossibly expensive for the locals. In a past show, we were talking about the very same thing and got an email from one of our regular listeners in San Juan del Sur saying the same thing. Remember? Anyway, she says the gringos have jacked up the land prices, and because so many expats have arrived, resentment against them is a predictable outcome. How can it be otherwise? The question is that where you want to live and have your Plan B? In a place where the locals resent you? That's why I say it's always best to live off the gringo tourist trailer, quite a ways from a gringo-centered place anyway. Then she goes on to say, many locals have pointed to gentrification by gringos as the underlying cause of a new wave of anti-gringo resentment. Then the article says, many expats living in gringo areas are reporting issues of racism against them and criminal targeting. They're seeing that in places that are expensive by local standards. That means in places only gringos can afford. Then the article says, it's Latin American capital cities and popular resort towns that are the hotspots for anti-foreign sentiment. Then we have Texas native Miguel Fritz. He said he suffered a violent accident after being robbed by locals in the state of Jalisco, Mexico. He says a group of 5 local men beat him while threatening to cut him with a knife while trying to reclaim objects that they stole from his home. Once the police arrived, Fritz was astounded that his attackers were let go and he was arrested instead. Now I have charges against me, he said. Thieving isn't a shameful endeavor if the person you're stealing from is either rich, foreign, or both. He said that's how they look at things in Mexico. And though he said he suffered robbery and discrimination while living in Mexico, this guy Fritz claimed that Costa Rica was far worse. And though he declined to elaborate when queried about his experiences in Costa Rica, he said you can't have a relationship with a Costa Rican lady, a tica, without them gaining financially from you. Those are the unstated rules, he said. The article goes on to say, for others, the appearance of racist attitudes towards gringos and expats has been more subtle. For example, one U.S. expat who wants to be called Jennifer due to the small town she lives in near Quintana Roo, Mexico. That's what's called the Mexican Riviera area, where Cancun, Playa del Carmen, Tulum, Cozumel, etc. are located. She says locals have hostility towards foreigners and expats that often manifests itself in casual conversation. For example, she said while dating a Mexican local, she recalled a taxi ride across town this year where the driver told her boyfriend right in front of her, you shouldn't be with her. You need to find a nice Mexican girl, not a gringa. He was serious too. At the time, Jennifer said she wrote off the comments as just some racist old guy from another generation, but definitely it stuck with her, she says. highlighting the fact she said that not everyone is thrilled with the idea of gringos dating locals. Then, reading on, there's a case of Tim Milan, a U.S. expat and former military guy who came to Ecuador 10 years ago. Ecuador, as you know, has been International Living's number one pick for expats in the past couple of years. So obviously, the gringos are piling in. Anyway, he says, he moved there and now runs his own bakery business near the town of Puerto Viejo. He also spent time living in Salinas, where foreigners are quickly snatching up oceanfront properties. He says due to high rates of poverty and drug trafficking in the coastal cities, there's lots of crime. More than likely, at some point, he says, I'll be assassinated in Ecuador. He added that speaking out against institutionalized corruption in Ecuador can be dangerous. Mr. Milan says he's been developing an eco-lodge on his lands, but the project has been full of unpleasant clashes with the locals. He says, neighbors come into my property and steal my fruit. I've got it on camera. We argue, of course, but they feel like it's allowed. They feel they're entitled to take what's yours if you're a gringo. He's had problems with local contractors, too, explaining that after paying an electrician thousands to wire his property, they never finished. He says the locals take advantage of people who don't speak Spanish. Now, where have we heard that before? He says expat and gringo cultural clashes are part of the problem too, since we're willing to pay two or three times the local price for things like rent and eating at restaurants. The message is all expats are rich, so they can afford to lose money. Meanwhile, in Quito, Ecuador, Candice Williams, an expat, she says she's been insulted by locals right out of the blue, calling her an American that from people she'd never met in her life. She said recently she was in a bar and an Ecuadorian man told her to go back to America. And she's not even American. She's from South Africa. The locals don't know the difference. We're all gringos and gringas to them. She says in Quito, Ecuador, there's noticeable racism against gringos. And here we have Christian George, an Australian who moved to Bolivia, says there's definitely an anti-Western sentiment there, too. Very noticeable, he says. Then he describes clashes with his local Bolivian neighbors who've told him to go back to his own country on more than one occasion. More recently, he said someone broke into his property and stole his passports. Shortly after, the thief reached out to him and offered to sell them back. In the end, he says, the anti-foreign sentiment exists, but it's not enough to make me want to pack my bags and leave. Not yet. So there you have it. Just a few more stories to prove how gringos and expats can ruin a good thing. Bottom line, when you're considering a plan B, skip the tourist trails, and any places those rags like International Living describe as the latest greatest soft landings for expats and gringos. Of course, those gringo tourist trails are nice places to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.